Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Amy Eddings in for Brian Lehrer. On Friday, Governor Christie announced that Sandy caused at least $29.4 billion worth of damage. That's damage to personal property in New Jersey, businesses, transportation, utilities, and infrastructure. Our own Nancy Solomon, the managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio, joins us now 4 weeks after the storm hit to take a look at the damage and what we know about how New Jersey will approach rebuilding. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Amy.
The damage assessment by the Christie administration took longer than expected. Governor Cuomo of New York out in front very early on with a $30 billion price tag, and I understand he's providing the state's congressional delegation with a briefing on his price tag today. And then Governor Christie on Friday comes out with this figure that's close to what Governor Cuomo proposed will take to rebuild New York. Has Governor Christie said how much he will – he's just putting that price tag out there. Do we know for sure that that's what he's going to ask FEMA and the federal government for in terms of supplemental funds?
Well, I guess you could say that's the $29.4 billion question.
Yeah.
You know, he has not said, and he's holding a press conference this afternoon, and he's going to be asked once again what he is going to be asking the federal government for. He has said that that number is still initial and that it may grow.
Really? He's still assessing?
Yeah. I think there's overall belief that this is still a kind of rounded figure. And it's obviously, I mean, when you get up to that kind of money, $30 billion, I mean, that's almost the what the state spends in a year for absolutely everything. So that's a lot. Obviously, it's a lot of money. But, you know, we're talking about a huge chunk of property. You know, when you think about the breadth of the damage of how the storm hit the state and the storm surge and how it went from the Jersey Shore and the southern parts of the Jersey Shore all the way up to Bergen County. I mean, massive damages in Bergen County. So you really, you know, I think it's pretty understandable that it would take a while to kind of tally this up and get a good assessment.
And remind us what Governor Christie has said, if at all, what he thinks that money should be used for. Governor Cuomo making statements early on about climate change, connecting Sandy to global warming, and saying unequivocally what he wants to use some of this money for is hardening infrastructure like utilities, like New York City's mass transit system, in anticipation of what Cuomo believes are going to be more regular big storms like this. Has Governor Christie said similar things about using this money to, you know, build it better and bigger and harder, or just to rebuild it to what it once was?
Right. Well, this is fascinating because Governor Christie, who is a masterful communicator, is really stuck here between his stated philosophies around smaller government, less spending, tax cuts, and his love for the state and the need that is so obvious and has to be dealt with. Massive amounts of damage from this storm. So there's so many pieces to that question. There's so many, because on the one hand, you have, I think over the course of the next months, we, the journalists, will be looking at how the state prepared for climate change and to what extent it prepared. The Army Corps of Engineers put out a map in 2009 that very clearly delineated a flood zone that is coming and came to bear. That flood zone is the evacuation A flood zone that New York City evacuates when a storm is coming. New Jersey did not evacuate that zone, and there were a lot of problems by not evacuating that zone. So, and it's a much bigger zone, and so you know, New Jersey Transit didn't get the trains out of Hoboken and the Kearny Junction and the Meadowlands. There was a lot of damage. That's taxpayer money. You know, so this whole question of what, you know, and then Christie has, you know, his love of the Jersey Shore and the clear differences between what parts of the beach where they were engineered for dune to bring in sand were saved, and the parts that were decimated because there were no dunes. And so, you know, now he said, and I think you've got a piece of tape about how he wants to re-engineer
right.
the beaches.
Let me set this up. Our reporter, Anna Sale, from our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, had a report about what seems like a shift in Governor Christie's approach. 3 weeks ago, shortly after the storm, he said he would not focus on telling municipalities how he thinks they should rebuild. He said this.
I think the government does plenty of restriction on where people can build. I don't know that we need to increase it, but I think that in the main, that's a local decision, and the localities have to make that decision themselves.
More recently, he said this.
Now we need the president and the Congress to step up and make sure that they give them the resources that they need to be able to engineer the beaches from one end of New Jersey to the other so we don't have this kind of disaster again.
Engineer the beaches from one end of New Jersey to the other. Is Christie going to be advocating for a more centralized approach to rebuilding the Jersey Shore than he indicated initially? Are signs, is the magic eight ball pointing to this?
Yeah, and I think this is what's so fascinating is that he really is trying to somehow stand in the middle between these opposing philosophies. And so he talks about re-engineering the beaches, which, by the way, costs $13 million per mile and has to be done about every 2 or 3 years. And it's kind of unknown how much sand can you take out of the what's that big channel out in the sea that we live near? I forget what it's called.
New York Harbor? No,
but the place where it drops off and right. that's where all the fish live. There's only so much sand you can take out of there, one would expect, before, you know, I mean, for how many years and into how far into our future are we building up the sand dunes of New Jersey to protect the new houses that are going to be built behind them? So there's all of those questions. At the same time, he waived the permitting process for the next 6 months for every municipality to start rebuilding roads, rebuilding bridges. I mean, it is critical that these things get rebuilt. But if you take away the permitting process, what about environmental regulations? What about maybe redesigning for a future that includes more storms?
Hmm. Amy Eddings, joined by New Jersey Public Radio's managing editor, Nancy Solomon, and we're taking your calls. New Jerseyans, do you think your town should decide how to rebuild using federal dollars, or do you think there should be a comprehensive Cape May to the New York border beach plan for New Jersey, a comprehensive pillar-to-post plan for rebuilding New Jersey beaches? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Nancy, explain for me what happened with these engineered beaches, these Army Corps of Engineer beaches, and how these differences emerged post-Sandy. There were ones that the Army Corps of Engineer had built up to protect the towns. They fared much better than towns that did not have that kind of protection. Why did some towns have this Army Corps of Engineer help and others did not? Was that a federal decision or a local decision? What were those decisions based upon?
I'm not exactly sure the answer to your question in terms of who made the decision. I know that those investments were made and that the result is that the barrier sent the water around
to all the other communities
right. and protected the houses that were directly behind the dunes. So you have this patchwork quilt effect along the shore where you have decimated towns and intact towns, and they're right up next to each other. And ultimately this would be what Governor Christie is advocating for is a federal expense to re-engineer all of the Jersey Shore. And one of the arguments in favor, and David First of New Jersey Public Radio had a fantastic short little feature about this morning, that the Jersey Shore takes in about $30 to $35 billion or creates $30 to $35 billion a year in tourism dollars. So it's a very expensive proposition to build the dunes. It's a very expensive proposition for New Jersey to
let them languish and lose that tourism revenue.
Right.
And those towns to lose that tourism revenue.
Right. So these decisions are very complicated because you've got fiscal decisions and economic decisions. You've got
and emotional
tremendous
decisions.
Amount of nostalgia. You've got very different levels of power and privilege in terms of who has a home at the Jersey Shore and, you know, which legislators are attached to their home at the Jersey Shore. And then you've also got a tremendous growth of the suburbs at the Jersey Shore. These are now urban communities where people commute to New York to work and live. These are full-time, year-round communities. So it's
which is a whole different stress on the beaches, on and it's different having a bungalow versus having a three-story huge house on a large footprint with your beachside views. Nancy, you were mentioning how important and critical the Jersey Shore is to the economic engine of the state. Comment on our show page: I thought Christie was a Republican. Why on earth would he grovel to Obama to pay for private (parentheses) beachfront and quasi-private (parentheses) utilities property? So we're taking your comments at the Brian Lehrer show page at WNYC.org. Robert from Manhattan, you're on the Brian Lehrer show. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning. Some years ago when I got out of college, I was working at the Natural Resources Defense Council. And one of the things we were doing was commenting on the implementation of the Coastal Zone Management Act, which included zoning overlays for coastal areas and building requirements as well to avoid storm damage. And this is back in 1982. It was implemented 82, 83. And I'm wondering, these issues were all on the radar screen way back then. Were they just ignored? Was the law not implemented properly? Or did something different happen? I'm not sure if this history is outside the wheelhouse of your guest, but it's a curious situation.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what the law was supposed to do, Robert? Was it supposed to prevent unbridled development? And you're suggesting that that didn't happen, or it was supposed to provide for these Army Corps of Engineer dunes all up and down the coast, and that didn't happen?
Well, it wasn't about the Army Corps of Engineer dunes. Matter of fact, on Long Island, there was a plan. The Army Corps wanted to build a groin field from Montauk to Queens. And that was prevented, apparently, by the head of the Fire Island Seashore because of the damage it would have done. If you set up groins, you create catchment areas for sand, but then you also create a shadow area that's starved of sand. So there are costs and benefits to that sort of thing, playing with nature that way. But what the act was intended to do was twofold. One was it was intended to make sure that coastal land uses were appropriate to the coast, so that land was used properly. Things that needed to be near water were near water, and things that didn't were not. But the other thing that it did was to overlay a land use policy that took account of hurricanes and other coastal damage and tried to reduce that damage. So, for example, I was writing comments on the New York State implementation of the plan, and there were requirements that you could not build on the top of the first dune. Now, a beach has a dune system. Usually there's a first dune and a second dune. And there were questions about, well, how do you qualify where the dune begins and stops? Is it the top of the dune or the landward toe of the dune and so forth, because these things move?
Robert, thank you for starting to go into more detail. I think I sense where your comment is going, and I believe it's probably going to require more research on our part. And I'm not sure that that it would have mattered in terms of deflecting damage from Sandy. I mean, perhaps it would if it would reduce the amount of multi-million-dollar homes that now need to get rebuilt or restored in some way, jacking up that price tag for restoration from Sandy efforts. But whether or not this plan will be referred to or should be referred to as part of a larger comprehensive plan to prepare for larger storms. Again, as Nancy Solomon pointed out, Governor Christie isn't talking about that in the same way that New York's governor, Governor Cuomo, is about making changes to the shoreline and to our infrastructure to prepare for more storms like this. Right now, he's just talking about restoring it to what it was pre-Sandy.
Right, and he hasn't uttered the words climate change. And you know, so that remains to be seen. But I think, you know, the hallmark of New Jersey politics and life and civic life and in individual life is local control.
Right.
And so what New Jersey has is a tremendous number of towns, much more than any other state. And each town controls its building process and its zoning. And so you don't have a New Jersey coast that is you know, that is planned with the environment and coming storms and is cohesive in that way. What you have are individual towns that plan for themselves. And, you know, I think an enormous public debate is about to ensue about what is the appropriate use for the Jersey Shore. You know, does it make sense to have boardwalks with amusement parks? Does it make sense to have million-dollar homes and all of and the suburban development right up against these what are wetlands and beach environments? I mean, the whole area around Raritan Bay. I mean, there's amazing amount of suburban destruction where, you know, towns have been built in a wetland.
Mm. Barry from Manhattan, you're on WNYC with New Jersey Public Radio's Nancy Solomon. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm an architect, and as you know, architects have been dealing with these kind of issues for years, as the previous caller suggested. But there's a couple things I think that could happen. One is that changing, you know, for Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo and Mayor Bloomberg to allow people to rebuild exactly as they had before doesn't make any sense. The fact of the matter is that you can rebuild a foundation with modern techniques that let water in and water out again, so that the house doesn't crumble, for about the same price, probably the same price, as a normal foundation. So that's the first thing. There's simple ways that people can change the way they live and the way they take care of their houses.
Barry, excuse me, to the issue that we're talking about, though, do you think that this should be a federal mandate now, post-Sandy, that we've learned a big lesson and there needs to be some comprehensive federal plan that provides for these kinds of architectural details and regulations and rules? Or do you think that local municipalities should continue to have their make their own land use decisions for their shores?
Well, you know, my second point was going to really be talking about that, which is that it seems to me that insurance companies are the ones who are really losing here by not having some sort of basic federal oversight of how things are rebuilt, so that in the future, even if it's the cost is the same, in the future these houses are not going and other properties are not going to be, you know, floating away. So I would think that the insurance companies could put pressure on the federal government, and I do agree that there could be some federal intervention with the basic design questions of how you live in the new 21st century situations.
Barry, thank you so much for your call. Nancy, Moody's, the ratings agency, announced some towns might get a credit downgrade post-Sandy. Towns like Seaside Heights, Atlantic City, Brick, Toms River, Woodbridge. Did the storm reveal vulnerabilities in these towns that existed before the storm, or is it just that these towns will get so much less in property tax revenue because, for example, in Woodbridge, the Hess refinery was offline for many, many days, and that meant people weren't showing up for their jobs and out of work for a time because the plant was closed. What are we seeing about the local fiscal cliffs that some of these municipalities are facing?
Yeah, I think this is really it's a huge, huge problem. And You know, Woodbridge was already being watched by Moody's. So, and as you said, it wasn't storm damage so much as the Hess refinery being off for 2 weeks. But, you know, and that's their biggest, one of their biggest taxpayers and one of the biggest employers in the town. So, you know, what we're seeing is towns that, you know, and it's not just the shore towns and the towns that you see on TV that were decimated. You know, towns all across the state had enormous numbers of trees down. And, you know, power lines down. And that, you know, every time you had a power line across a street, you had a cop standing there to stop people from driving and walking over it.
Police overtime.
Yeah. So there's just enormous costs that were that went to the towns, not just the state, not just the private property owners. And they were already in a fiscal crisis, the towns of New Jersey. For one thing, there are too many of them. For another thing, they're entirely dependent on property taxes. Well, now property tax revenues are going to go down. People are going to appeal their assessment. And, you know, they have till January 10th. If you have material depreciation on your home,
oh, yeah,
you can file for a decrease in your property taxes. So we're talking about 400 fiscal cliffs.
Mm. And we'll see how Governor Christie uses whatever money he gets of this $29 billion possible request of the federal government to help local municipalities stave off these individual little fiscal cliffs. New Jersey Public Radio, Nancy Solomons, managing editor. Thanks so much for joining me, and thank you for your calls. Up next, more than 700 bookstores, including Barnes & Noble, are boycotting a cookbook. How the 4-Hour Chef has opened a new front in the ongoing battle between publishing houses and Amazon. We'll talk to the cookbook's author, Timothy Ferris, just ahead.